So much better when you smile. Just smile. So smile.
That's good advice from the Ball Brothers. I smile. And before that, from Paul Wilbur, Up to Jerusalem. 8.5 minutes now after the hour. It's Tuesday, and that means Dr. Don visits. Dr. Don Clark from Creation Moments, member of the board there, and a biochemist in his own right. Don, happy Tuesday, and how are things down in Garden Valley, Texas?
Well, things are fine down here, and... Yeah, we got a little overcast weather today, but the last several days have been sunny. Unfortunately, I've been in bed. I was in bed most of the weekend due to a bad cold. I'm kind of recovering from a cold that I had this weekend.
You can kind of hear some traces of that yet, so hopefully your energy's back, or at least in a day or two, bounce back, and because your grapes need you out there.
Yes, well... And my wine.
We often talk to Don about his vineyard. He's in the burgeoning, I don't know if burgeoning is the right word for the Texas wine industry, but maybe it's a fledgling wine industry. Would that be more accurate?
We're on the cusp of really producing a lot of wine here in Texas.
Okay.
I was told recently that the hill, not the hill country, but the hot northern plains, this past year, they have planted another 1,000 acres.
Ooh, wow.
In vineyards. That's where most of the vineyards are in Texas. Now, we have a vineyard, obviously, and there's other spotted vineyards here and there, but the bulk of the vineyards are in the Brownsville, Lubbock area. So, which I guess at some point in time I'm going to have to go visit because I need to make probably a contract with some of those folks to buy some grapes.
Probably should be a Texas Wine Growers Association or winemakers. Wow, it probably already is one, I'll bet you, huh?
Oh, there is. It's called TWGA, Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association.
Okay.
So we definitely do have one. We have an annual conference, which is coming up at the end of February. There's different smaller conferences at various times throughout the year. Most of it, obviously, is either before growing season or after the growing season.
Oh, yeah. That's understandable.
How much of the wine is sold out of state?
Oh, that number I don't really have, but it's a significant impact on the Texas economy.
Really?
And, okay. Yes. And so, I couldn't even quote the numbers, but at this point, but it is a significant impact, and I guess the legislature just approved additional funds for the Texas Agricultural Extension folks because they have hired 4 new people to handle the 4 different regions in Texas for the grape growing regions.
So then, when California falls off into the ocean, we'll be okay because we have Texas.
You'll have Texas, that's right. Okay. So we're anticipating that.
That's good news.
By the time that happens, we should be in good shape.
Well, I'll tell you what else is working in your favor then is global warming. Because that relates to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which must be good for grapes, I would think. Wouldn't you think?
Well, that's the interesting part, you know, this old global warming thing, which has now been changed to climate change. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the topic for today is global warming, climate change, and a little bit of history. Folks actually started getting concerned about the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere because they thought, they thought CO2 tracked with the temperature increases that we had as the temperatures were increasing, the CO2 was dramatically increasing in the atmosphere due to you know, primarily industrial type of activities.
And that's not disputed, is it? I mean, we believe that scientific evidence that the carbon dioxide was increasing and is. Correct.
And is increasing, okay. Yes. No, that is absolutely a measurable quantity, and they have been measuring that for quite some time, actually. And, yeah, you can look at the graphs, and, well, sure enough, since 1850s or even a little bit before, the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere has increased. And has increased, you know, significantly. I mean, it's certainly above the signal to noise ratio by quite a bit. And over the past, let's say, since 1998, for example, the carbon, the CO2 in the atmosphere has increased by almost 10%. So, you know, that. Okay, well, so it's increased, you know, significantly. So there was this, they thought they had a correlation between the temperature increase and the CO2 increase. And they thought, we're going to get a CO2 kind of a canopy or a greenhouse effect. And we're going to see, as the CO2 continues to increase, we're going to see temperatures continue to increase. And so there were some mathematical models that were built, and they tried to take into account all of the factors that they thought correlated CO2 increases with temperature. And they came up and predicted, probably back in the 70s or so, they predicted that, you know, we've got a major problem here, and we've got to cut back dramatically or drastically on our CO2 emissions in order to curb our temperatures. Well, since that alarm was sounded, the temperatures have been stable. In matter of fact, the temperatures haven't changed from 1998 until today. The temperature seems to be hovering. The global temperatures, that is, seem to be hovering about the same.
Now, well, what is this temperature? Where is this an average of temperatures from around the world, or it must be an average they're looking at?
Yes, it's an average global temperature.
Okay.
I mean, you can have local temperature fluctuations, but since we're looking at global carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere, then in order to correlate the global carbon dioxide, you got to look at the global temperatures. Mm-hmm. So the global temperatures hasn't increased since really 1998. As a matter of fact, it's leveled off. But the CO2 emissions, like I said, has gone up almost 10%. There doesn't, at least on the surface, it appears that, well, we got a couple of problems. One, whatever models were used, they weren't taking into account the various things that one needs to take into account in order to make accurate predictions, or there's no link between carbon dioxide and temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the scare about? And really, that's kind of the bottom line is, the initial scare and got people all concerned may not be a concern at all, and may be being used politically to advance political a political agenda,
the date today is the 20th.
19th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's right. So it's a week from tomorrow. The ice ages are going to be. Europe will start a new ice age.
This was Al Gore's proposal.
Yeah, it's Al Gore's proposal in the movie, An Inconvenient Truth. And he said in 10 years, and at that time it was January 27th. So, 10 years ago, 2005 or 2006, and next week is it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's all over.
There you go.
There we go. We can now we can wait a week. Yeah, I mean, that's not a big deal. We can do that.
Yeah, and then have this discussion next week and see where we are at.
Do a recap.
I think Al will give all his money back if it doesn't happen.
Okay. Well, there you go. So it's an interesting thing, because there is no doubt that the carbon dioxide percentages in the percent in the atmosphere has definitely increased. And if you look at the increase since, let's say, the 1850s or since the start of the Industrial Revolution, population increase as well, because population obviously has an effect on this. I think a more drastic effect is not necessarily, okay, so we're burning more fossil fuels. Yes, that is the case, but we're also destroying forests. Now, what's the big deal about forests? Well, what uses CO2, carbon dioxide?
Well, plants, trees, yeah.
And trees in particular. So the more forest you cut down, the less trees you have, the less ability you have to take that carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and rebuild carbon, if you will, and resupply the carbon source in the soil. Now, I think the greater effect, obviously there doesn't appear to be much link between carbon dioxide and temperature, and carbon dioxide is not a very good the greenhouse gas. Water does a much better job as a greenhouse gas than atmospheric water, for example, than carbon dioxide does. But yet, we don't hear a big cry, well, let's stop putting water into the atmosphere. Well, that's kind of ridiculous, because 2/3 of the Earth's surface is covered with water, so we can't do that. But it looks like man has caused an increase in CO2, and so that's why all of the concern has been about CO2.
Well, let's take a pause here for a minute, because it's my observation in my lifetime here, that science does a pretty good job of describing how things work, but not why things work. And it seems to me that to find the cause of global warming, you have to know why, which is something they're not very good at. Now, if they can only measure, if there are records somehow of the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that maybe date from the 1850s, 1860s, that's a relatively short history. What's to say that this increase in carbon dioxide isn't a natural cycle? It ebbs and flows over a longer period of time. What say you, Dr. Don?
Well, it does, if you can believe ice core samples taken from Greenland, for example, in the Antarctic, which has been done. And the hypothesis is, well, there's little air bubbles within these within the ice, produced by these the ice age or ice ages over periods of time. Then if you plot that, which they have done, and I looked up the papers with that, you see that temperature increases and CO2 increases along with the temperature increasing. Now, that doesn't give you a cause and effect, that the CO2 is causing the temperature increase, or that...
It could be the other way around, couldn't it?
It could be the other way around. The temperature increase is causing the carbon dioxide increase, because as temperature increases, obviously you have more plants, and you have more more activity on the Earth, and so maybe the just general animal activity on the Earth is is increasing the amount of carbon dioxide correlating to the temperature increase. That we don't know. What we do know is that if you can trust your ice core samples, and if the assumption about how these layers in your ice cores were actually formed, then one can conclude that, hey, folks, we've got more CO2 in the atmosphere now than we ever have in the past, let's say, 450,000 years ago. Hmm. Well, you know, the time scale is drastically off for those ice cores, for the layers in the ice cores, because the reason for the ice cores is misunderstood. Now, the reason that's normally given is that these were laid down over, you know, thousands of years, and each layer represents perhaps a year, and hundreds of thousands of years, if not. And so, when you dig down into the ice, then you're digging back into history. And part of that is probably true, but if you don't take into account that, hey, there was a global flood, following the global flood, there was a breakup of the continents, and following in the breakup of, as the breakup of the continents were occurring, we had tremendous amount of volcanic activity, which was the actual result and cause of the ice age, or ice mini ages, if you will, in the first place. And that only happened about 400,000, 500 years ago, instead of the 450, you know, thousand, if not, you know, longer, you know, time period. Then what you're seeing in those ice cores is really what the atmosphere kind of looked like at that time of or post global flood, for example, when we had all the volcanic activity. So it's a that you can draw from that are kind of limited, because gee, there was a lot of geological activity going on. We know that the Earth was covered with water. We know that we had a tremendous amount of vegetation that was obviously buried and you know, floated on the surface of the water, you know, after the flood. And that decaying vegetation certainly contributed significantly to the increase in carbon dioxide as it was, you know, being decayed. So you get a kind of a different picture, if you will. You have a different model to go from as far as CO2 being produced in the past, if you're looking at ice core samples.
Well, again, it's a different why to go with a common how. We all see that they're ice core samples and have bubbles in them, but people don't agree on why they're there or what the cause was. Yeah,
and they don't, and you can't make any connection, more importantly, with the rise in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as captured by these ice cores, and the temperature increase, for example. Because the temperature increase could have simply been, well, this is just a period of quiescence, if you will, of volcanic activity. And then, you know, more continents, I mean, they started splitting a little bit more. You'd have more volcanic activity. The temperature would drop because you've got now a canopy of volcanic dust in the atmosphere blocking the sun. And, you know, that would subside. And then you would have the sun again, which would warm things up. And, you know, that cycle would go back and forth as long as the the plate tectonics was going on following the flood. But bringing back the issue, which is global warming. Now, you know, global warming, because there has not been this correlation between carbon dioxide and increased in temperature, especially since the late 1990s, where the temperatures have been stable globally, they have changed the tune to climate change. Now, the problem with climate change is that, okay, global warming, at least you know that, hey, scientists are saying that the globe is warming up. But with climate change, if it warms up, you can blame that on man. If it cools down, you can blame that on man. And so, therefore, we have an excuse now to perhaps tax the industrial nations of the world so we can collect money to give it to the poorer nations of the world. And we can have equalization of our global, you know, economies, if you will. Mm-hmm. But you can't pinpoint it as far as any scientific, you know, direction in which the temperature is either increasing or decreasing. All you can say is that, yeah, the climate is changing. Well, guess what, folks? The climate has been changing ever since there's been an Earth, mm-hmm. With the exception of possibly before the flood, where it was probably pretty darn stable because God created it perfect. And so the environment was perfect for man. It was it was perfect for the animals. It was perfect for plants. Everybody lived you know, quite comfortably and happily, of course, until the fall of man, which changed all of that.
Mm-hmm. Are there ice core samples that would suggest that?
That would suggest what? Oh,
that suggests that there would that before the fall there was a long period of calm and peace and tranquility and no fluctuation of
time. Yeah, before the flood, yeah.
Well, no, because it would have been destroyed by the flood.
Okay.
Hmm. Right? I mean, because you would, if you had a global flood, that means that water was everywhere, which would have you know, melted any type of ice or snow accumulation.
It's kind of like a cosmic reboot is what it was. Is what
is
it
there,
was to be.
Yeah. Is there any... I mean, are there any soil core samples? Because some of the soil would have been there. It would have to be a very deep sample, and then maybe wouldn't reflect. I guess that if it was a deep soil sample, it wouldn't reflect fluctuations in climate.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We wouldn't have... I don't see any geological evidence that, okay, the climate should have been relatively stable at the time prior to the flood, other than from a biblical point of view.
There's a sentence in this article that jumps out at me, and this that we're basing our discussion on an article at the Institute of Creation Research, and it's called Genesis and Climate Change. And this is the one part of the article that says this is a political argument and not a scientific one. And to quote the article, quote, "The fact that climate change is a rather vague description that could refer to either a warming or a cooling climate makes it harder to hold scientists accountable for failed predictions."
Which is one of the things that my stepson and I had a discussion about, it was just before Christmas, and I guess maybe I was taking my Christmas presents in my hand, but I was, he's got a background in some scientific activity, and he has a fairly good understanding. Right now, he's got some light reading on his bed table. He's looking or reading up for the MCATs he wants to go back to medical school. Hmm. So he's reading up on his scientific research, and he had difficulty telling me what the theory of climate change was. And then again, why change the name? Why alter the name? And my point at the time was that science exists to debunk and get rid of theories that don't hold water, okay, so to speak. And that hasn't happened yet. Hmm. And partly because of political reasons that it hasn't happened yet. Every time somebody comes up with an alternate theory or a theory that disproves the original theory, the anthropogenic climate change or global warming, it's either shouted down, but it's never disproven. I mean, the new alternate theory is not proven. And, you know, and it's for, I would say for the general person walking around on two legs, it's become so murky, so ununderstandable that it's just easy to say, I'm going to go with the crowd.
Well, and that's
go along with what they, you know, whatever they say. I mean, yes, I have three friends that say, yes, global warming is real, so I'll go with them.
Well, and that's exactly the point, because if you can't nail this down, and you've got, you know, climatologists that are saying there's no such thing as global warming, and then now they're calling it climate change, and then you've got, you know, folks that are being paid to say that, yes, man is causing the climate to change, and that's why it was colder last year and wetter last year, at least in some parts of the country, but it was drier in other parts of the country and hotter in other parts of the country. They can point to that and say, you see, man caused that. And there's no scientific basis for it. And so it is harder to pin down. People cannot describe it because it's not described. It's just, you know, stated that, we got a problem here that's caused by man, so we need to penalize those who are obviously causing the problem, the industrial nations, and at the expense of us and others, and then give some money to those nations that need to be developed. But those nations, interestingly enough, now those nations that need to be developed, brought into the 21st century, if you will, are the ones that have forests and are chopping them down and causing even more CO2 to enter the atmosphere.
And generally speaking, those nations, those third world nations, the money doesn't go to the population. The money goes to the political leaders.
Well, and exactly.
They get to buy new Mercedes and Jaguars.
At the expense of the welfare of the people. Now, the other interesting thing about carbon dioxide, the more carbon dioxide you have in the atmosphere, the better it is for the plants. You're going to have more plant growth with an increase of carbon dioxide. And if you've ever had a terrarium as you were, you know, if you were growing up and did kind of a science experiment, if you ever had a terrarium, you would know that, okay, keeping all of this in, not only it gives you an increase in moisture, then it gives you a more consistent climate, but it also helps if you've got more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, so things degrading and plants grow better. So that's what's happening, actually. We've had an increase in tree growth since the carbon dioxide concentrations has been increasing. In the atmosphere, so that's a good thing. But we don't hear the politicians talking about, we're going to have more timber, we're going to have more carbon fuel or whatever, because we're getting more trees growing. You
know, again, this speaks to kind of the self-correcting ability of the earth, of God's creation, to heal itself when things get out of balance.
Well, and that's a very good point. However, it seems that those who are pushing this climate change in sounding the alarm, at this last climate summit, if you will, back in 2010 in Cancun, the gal who was presiding over the meeting, invoked the presence, if you will, of the Mayan Jaguar goddess to say, hey, let's get the goddess to help us to have creativity and to weave all of our thoughts, you know, together.
That's interesting.
So it's a pagan, you know, philosophy and a pagan god, if you will, that is being invoked. And so therefore, you know, you should wonder about the results. We're not interested in truth here. We're not interested in scientific facts. This is a more pagan driven type of philosophy that ignores biblical truth, ignores the fact that there was a global flood and the results of the global flood, and pretty much ignores science and just wants to come up with creative ideas so that we can say we've got a problem and so we need to fix it governmentally and politically.
Well, here's a tougher question then. Who's leading the charge to remedy this move toward climate change or global warming? Is it the political community? Is it the Greenpeace movements of the world? Or is it science?
It's the political.
Yeah.
Now it is political. Mm-hmm. It may have started with science from the point of view that, hey, we see an increase in temperatures, we see a drastic increase in carbon dioxide, and so maybe there's a link between the two, so maybe we should start looking at this and start looking at man's activities. Once that took hold, then it's been a politically driven thing ever since. Because if you're looking, looking at this from from a global governance point of view, if you're looking for an excuse to control all the peoples of the world, this is a good one to hang your hat on because it's global.
Hmm. The number one threat to the world, huh? Yeah, and it's coming from politicians, not from scientists. Not least, to my ears, that's the way it sounds. I'm talking with Dr. Don Clark, who is the member of the board to Creation Moments. And by the way, I want to mention their website, too. You can link to them from our site. CreationMoments.com is a wellspring of information about young earth creationism and primarily the science behind it. Not so much the politics. That's one of the things I really admire about the Creation Moments folks is that their concentration is on the science, not on all the emotional stuff that sometimes develops around the scientific issues. Check them out at creationmoments.com. And Don, as always, we're grateful that you were able to spend time with us and hope you can rest up some and get over that cold. I know that that's bugging you, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I'm on the mends. I was starting to get better yesterday, and I'm a little bit better today. So okay. we're heading in the right direction.
Okay,
Don, we'll see you next week. Okay, take care of yourself.
All right, bye-bye. Take care too.
See you, Don.